Our special guest this hour, Stephen Dynan. We're going to take your calls. His book is Sacred America, Sacred World. So get ready to make the call when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Stephen Dynan with us, of course. Stephen, would you give out your websites and where people can get your book, Sacred America, Sacred World?
Yeah, thank you. It's at sacredamerica.net, and we actually have a big launch special. Today's the publication date, so we have a bunch of extra bonuses when people buy today or tomorrow. So if you go there now, you can get about $527 worth of bonuses for purchasing today. So it's a great time to buy.
What do you think of some of the politicians' thoughts about free education, free college, the health care programs? Where does that all fit in?
You know, I think that ultimately the best solutions are ones that integrate the best of left and right. That's part of where, in my book, I talk about political cross-training, where we have our natural predisposition. And in this case, Bernie's followers are wanting to have a much more expanded democratic socialism, a much more generous state, higher taxation, more similar to Northern European countries, which actually do have a high rate of happiness. But it hasn't been as much part of the American DNA. So it's a big stretch from where we are. So I think what's useful about it is it brings into the public discourse a sense of possibility, things that we could actually really think about and really look at as possibilities. However, you know, the actual proposals for how do we do that aren't super well thought out, and there's a lot of political hurdles to implementing them. So in a way, there I see a lot of them as expansions of our sense of possibility, which is good, especially for a new generation to say, wow, we could really envision a whole new way of doing America. However, ultimately, the best solutions are ones that build upon the past and that integrate multiple perspectives. So that's where we were talking before about Van Jones and Newt Gingrich. That's more likely to get traction because you're bringing the best together from left and right in a more transpartisan fashion. And so I think that's sort of a next level of what I would love to see from the Bernie Sanders camp is to get more practical and collaborative with people who think very differently about what are the things that could get traction and what, you know, and how quickly, and that creates more bridges rather than just seeming kind of like an pie in the sky vision.
It isn't a lot of this too, Stephen, just common sense about what to do for people.
What to do for people? I think it is common sense. You know, I think that the common sense is that we want to design a system that balances different elements. We want to maximize our freedoms, but we also want to take care, design a system that in which people are supported and allowed to optimize their potential and have opportunity and not fall through the cracks. We don't want to live in a society where half the people are homeless on the street and there's like class turmoil. It's like we want to have a healthy, happy society, and there's a certain amount of that we want the engine of capitalism to churn away and be as conscious and powerful and driving as possible, but we also want to design social support systems that really may ensure that people who are handicapped in one way or another, or that the elderly are taken care of, that we're not letting people drop through the cracks. So we want to be strong and entrepreneurial and compassionate at the same time, and that's where I think that it is useful and helpful to draw from both value systems on left and the right, because the right has tended towards what George Lakoff calls more the strict father archetype. It's tough, it's disciplined, it's focus on defense, it's focus on up by your bootstraps, self-responsibility, and that's helpful and grows us in certain ways. And the left is more sourced in what he calls more of the nurturing mother archetype, where it's like, let's take care of more people, let's be more compassionate. And that also has a value. If you think of a healthy family, you want mom and dad getting along. You want those value systems working together. And sometimes a little more of the strong father is more valuable, and sometimes more of the nurturing mother is more valuable. And ultimately, they create a good team. And so we want that kind of a teamwork approach in a national level rather than mom and dad at war with each other and essentially in just trying to undermine each other. That really destroys the health of the family. And it's frankly a bit traumatizing for us to witness, because we want our leaders to get along, and we want to see that you know, the people who are entrusted with the responsibility to make decisions for us are actually working in the in our best interest and in the interest of the common good. And that too often we're just seeing them just slugging it out, just trying to win the latest food fight, rather than really saying, let's make decisions that are going to benefit Americans for the next, you know, seven generations.
What if we built homeless cities around this country and sheltered people, fed people, gave them some medical attention, but it was just available to them, maybe even gave them a little voucher, $100 a month for free or something. But they lived in what I would call homeless cities created in certain areas. Would that work?
You know, I haven't delved a lot into that. I appreciate the bold thinking on your part. I think that you know, homelessness is a complex issue, because you have to deal with not just getting the home, but you have to deal with the psychology and sometimes the sense of failure. There's a lot of abuse in the background, sometimes drug addictions that lead
alcohol addiction
fall out of the social system. And so, you know, I think if you just give people a home, it doesn't always work. But you know, you have to, if you have a comprehensive approach where you're saying, okay, we're going to help you work through, you know, childhood trauma. We're going to help you work through addictions. We're going to help you develop practices that sustain you. We're going to help you get job skills that allow you to empower yourself. Ultimately, what people want to do is not just be sequestered off, but they want to be living out their full potential.
Sure.
So the, you know, I think there are creative ways to do that. And what I think is always interesting is to look at where are the best practices and who are the innovators. In the book that I talk about, how do we create, one way that we could do this is to create something called solutions councils. So these could be almost like a parallel function to our government, where they're scanning the landscape for what are the new innovations that are working, that are really getting results in different areas of society. And so to take on the homelessness thing, if you had a solutions council for California, and then that somebody is tasked with homelessness, then they're looking at programs around the world of saying, oh, what's working here, what's working here, and looking at the experiments, and then you replicate innovation faster. Because one of the challenges with government right now is it doesn't replicate innovation very quickly. You can have some great things happening in Kansas, but California never hears about them. So and that's partially because our political leaders spend half their time raising money, so we need to address that and get more of the money out of politics. That's a sort of a no-brainer. And we need to also have a mechanism for more innovation to come into government. And that's where this notion of solutions councils, which, you know, I've proposed now to Gavin Newsom, who's running for governor of California. He liked the idea. It hasn't gotten full traction yet, but I think it could be an interesting adjunct to our government, that basically sort of like the skunk works in a company, where the skunk works is off looking at what's the next growing edge thing, and most of the companies having to deal with delivering the products you need to deliver, but you need the innovators thinking ahead of the curve. And government, we don't really have that function baked in right now.
No, we don't. Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Diana in Orlando, Florida, east of the Rockies, to get things started. Hi, Diana.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I wanted to touch a couple of things with you guys. First of all, is the fact that, you know, U.S. has a very huge power over Europe. But U.S. saved my life and my family's life in 1986 when the Chernobyl disaster happened. U.S. saved our life.
Wow.
So, yes. My dad was a teacher, and he retired as a teacher. And in April 1986, when the Chernobyl disaster happened, the only station who broadcasted the disaster was Voice of America. That's, my dad risked his life, because back then, if you had any transistor radio in your house without government approval, you know, everything was mounted onto the walls. So they mounted our radios onto the walls that were broadcasting the propaganda.
They controlled everything, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah. So my dad had a small little made-up transistor radio that me, myself, my mom, my dad, my uncle get around every day. Between, if I don't if I remember correctly, between 7 and 7:30 p.m. every night to listen to Voice of America, and they told us that the Chernobyl exploded.
Yeah.
The Chernobyl.
It was a disaster. Did you lose any family members from the radiation afterwards?
Yes. My uncle died. My uncle died because he didn't listen to my dad. He went out in the rain 2 days after it happened.
Oh, God, yeah. Too much radiation. Too much fallout, Diana.
The clouds moved on, and he said, "Oh, wait, nothing happens to me. He's dead right now. He's dead."
Well, I'm glad you're in the United States, and for some of its shortcomings, and it has some, it's the best country on the planet. There's no doubt about that in my mind, Stephen.
Yeah, well, thank you, Diana. That really touched me just to hear that story. And it's so important as we focus on how our country needs to evolve to really deeply honor and appreciate what the role we've already played in so many different ways, and really holding out hope and bringing a spirit of freedom and possibility to your family. And I think it's so important that we remember that. And thank you for sharing it with us and for coming here to build your own new dream.
We've got the best. And you got to praise law enforcement and our military and the people who attempt to make this the best country, the freest country out there on the planet. It's
Amen.
It's a combination that worked. Ironically, we celebrated our 240th birthday yesterday. Isn't that something, Stephen?
It's truly amazing. I mean, when you look at what we've managed to accomplish, a relatively young country compared to so many, and we have accomplished so much, and it's not time to sit on our laurels. We have to say, well, there's more still to do. We got more work to create a more perfect union. We got more work to create a world at peace. We got more work to create the kind of solutions that are going to uplift people who are in poverty or oppressed around the world. But you know, we've got the ingenuity, we've got the know-how, we've got the drive. We can do this.
What do you say to people who say politically we have no choice, we have no say, that the candidates are handpicked, they're fed to us, and that's the way it is? What do you say to them?
I think besides arguing the truth value, it's not an empowering story to tell ourselves, because ultimately it says that we're powerless to affect change. And the truth is, you know, I've lobbied our Congress people. I've been in the office of our senators from California, as well as our congressional representative, and I've built relationships with some of the folks there. And not because I'm anybody special, I just took the time to do it. I worked with Friends Committee on National Legislation. They actually are very interested in what we have to share. And so you can build relationships with the existing representatives, both at the national level and local level, and really create more of a partnership. So there's an advocacy sometimes for policies, but sometimes there's ways that we can help our elected officials better do their job. Because, you know, frankly, most of them really do want to do a good job, and they want better things for our country. And so if we can work together with them, we're better off. So I'm a big believer of not putting all of our attention on just electing people who think like us, but then taking the officials that are there and saying, how can we help them do a better job? In a way that's not confrontational, but really like it's more about building a partnership with them, because they are elected to represent us. Mm-hmm. And even if they're not necessarily our first choice, they're still human beings who have a sincere desire to do good. And if we can help call that out in them and help give them the oftentimes the justification to do the right thing, because a lot of times they want to do the right thing, but they're getting heavy pressure to go in another direction. So they need the citizen voices to be backing them and giving them the stories to say, this is what we need to do, and be a champion of what really needs to happen.
We've got Patrick in Jacksonville, Florida, first time caller. Hi, Patrick, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I almost disagree with everything you're saying, Stephen. I mean, the only thing I agree with is we need to abolish the Federal Reserve. But if you double the minimum wage, you're going to lose jobs, because people are going to find a way around that. They're going to put these kiosks up. So So instead of someone taking your order, you're going to be going up to a computer screen. And second of all, Van Jones is a communist. So is yesterday's communist is today's progressive? And if you want a European lifestyle, I'm pretty sure they'll take you over there. Why you got to change our society? America is the greatest experiment there's ever been.
Greatest aspect of the show is that people can call in and not agree with a guest, Stephen.
Well, I respect that you have your opinions, Patrick. What I'm really trying to do is say, let's take the best of the full spectrum of political positions and really treat each other honorably and respectfully. And, you know, I think that if you can do that, we can disagree on different core issues and co-create a really great democracy.
There is something going on in this country now, Stephen, where it's difficult to discuss issues with people without the sides screaming at each other and really getting uptight and getting really, really bitter at each other. That's got to change.
I completely agree, because what happens is when everything's a screaming match and everything's a fight, it's like people don't let down their guard. They're not actually being authentic with what they really feel. They're in defense mode, and that's not the best situation to create really to real innovation, to create bridges that actually create real solutions. And so you got to shift that culture first, because if we're just screaming at each other, basically we're wasting our creative energy and not really charting the path to fulfilling America's full potential and promise.
Let's go to Bob in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, two questions for Stephen. First off, excuse me, how do you address the fact that if the minimum wage is raised to $15 an hour, the people that have been slaving away for 3, 4, and 5 years to get to $15 an hour are not going to get a raise? And secondly, you've got to tie a minimum wage to something other than just a set dollar figure, because then as long as it's a minimum wage at a set dollar figure, you're losing your tail at a minimum of 3% per year.
All right, I got 40 seconds left for a quick response, Stephen. Go ahead.
I think that phasing in a minimum wage over time is more appropriate. I wasn't talking more about the strategy of how to do that. It's more like the goal of raising the minimum wage to what people actually need to survive. So I do think you ought to tether it to what are the benchmarks to be able to live just a basic normal life without subsidies from the government, without subsidies from other taxpayers, and so that becomes effectively our floor minimum wage.
We're going to come back in just a moment here with Stephen Dynan. We're going to take final phone calls here before we bring in Russell Targ to talk about remote viewing. Stephen's book, Sacred America, Sacred World, all the information linked up at coasttocoastam.com with his website, sacredamerica.net. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Stephen Dynan with us, his book, Sacred America, Sacred World. Stephen, can we win this fight to correct some of the inequalities that are happening?
I think if we look back at our history, we have overcome every major challenge eventually. It doesn't always happen overnight, but when American people finally get clear that there's something that needs to be addressed, there we eventually figure it out and go to the next level. You know, that's part of the ingenuity, part of the creativity, part of the drive towards excellence that is baked into the American character. And so I do believe that we are going to design a better system, that we're not going to break down too far. We need to break down a bit to mobilize ourselves and go to the next level. But I do believe, I have a great faith in the American people and American character, that once we really realize what's at stake, that we're not going to just, you know, essentially end in sort of a class warfare or civil warfare, that we're basically going to figure out that some reforms are needed. We need to come together as Americans and help our country really design the next level of the American operating system.
If our founding fathers were picked up in a time machine and brought back to this time period, other than the wowing them with technology, which would blow them away, what do you think they would say about things on this time period?
Well, probably depends a little bit on the founding fathers. You know, some were very ambivalent about things like slavery and didn't want to bring that into the DNA of the country. I think they would be impressed with a lot of the progress we've made in terms of being more inclusive with other races and also with women. And I think that there would be a sense of like, wow, there's been a greater inclusivity that really does reflect the founding principles. I think they would be dismayed by the level of which political leaders now have spend 4 hours a day raising money, that there are so many special interests and lobbyists. I think that they would be very, very wary of that. And they would also have some real hesitations about the level of focus on political parties versus the larger good. And so I think it'd be a mixed bag, and I think the areas where they would be dismayed are precisely the areas that we need to have some deep reforms and really go to the next level in a way that isn't about left and right. It's really about a recognition that our democracy is too precious to corrupt it.
All right, let's go to final calls now. We go east of the Rockies. Saba is from Middletown, Ohio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Saba. You're on the air with us.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good. Good to talk with you.
Before I say what I want, your name in Arabic means someone of the light. Nur
yes.
is light in Arabic. So Nuri is someone who's enlightened.
And yours in Arabic is soft breeze.
Nur?
Yours. Saba.
Mine?
Saba means soft breeze in Arabic.
No, Saba means grandfather, somebody wise.
Two different dialects, I guess. But yeah, mine is called the light.
Yes, the enlightened, actually. And I appreciate it because you keep me awake. I drive all over the country, and I love to get your program. My comment to the gentleman there is, could he name one liberal policy that is ethical? He can use any argument he wants. Natural law, whatever he wants, from Aristotle all the way down to Mr. Evans right now, these big philosophers that can support his idea that taking somebody's hard labor and give it to somebody else without permission is ethical. And the other one is he's so pleasant and so wonderful. I don't understand or I don't believe he knows anything about Islam. I also challenge him to one other thing. Name one place in the Quran where it speaks of getting along and peace, making peace. He doesn't know what he's talking about. When I listen to this gentleman, I think he's wearing a tutu and jumping around and dancing and he doesn't make sense no matter what he does. Being positive is great, but we have to be ethical. And we have to know who our enemy is. And I don't think he knows either.
All right, but give us a specific question for him.
Yes. Could he name a liberal policy, any liberal policy that is ethical?
A liberal policy that is ethical. Stephen, you're challenged here.
I think that Met... Sorry, Saba, that we didn't seem to connect on a deeper level. I do want to operate with deep respect for Islam. I'm not as knowledgeable. I have some level of background of study of particularly Sufi teachers. But, in terms of Islam, I do believe that peace is built into or submission to the will of God is part of that, and peace is part of the foundational elements of the religion. In terms of ethical things, I really believe that it is ethical to treat other humans with dignity and respect. And so as an example of that, I think that when we're extending the rights to additional people to really be respected basically taken, respected with the rights of society, like recent advances with gay marriage. For me, that's a very ethical stand, and that is something that was very much a champion by the left, as well as by people on the right.
Stephen, if you could change one thing about this country, what would that be?
I would really change the combative political culture, because I feel like that's the thing that's holding us back. I think we've got a lot of the ingenuity, we've got a lot of the know-how, but we're squandering a lot of our creative gifts on essentially warring with each other rather than recognizing that we're all here together to work together to evolve a still better democracy and a still better country.
We have Anna in San Diego, California, west of the Rockies. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, George. I wanted to tell to share with your guest. You cannot talk with people whose mind are reptilian. I call it the reptilian effect, the brain effect, you know, because they are not on your frequency. They are not, and they will never understand this, you know. So these people have to stay behind. And so don't waste your energy with them, because they have no concept of what you're talking about, none whatsoever. And another thing, you know, we're fighting about the this candidate and that candidate. You know, if the people get into a consciousness that is united. Look, Mussolini said, this is what Mussolini said, and his policies or his politics were not, he was a Hitler supporter, but he said, you do not get the government you want, you get the government you deserve. That man knew human nature. He knew it.
Well, he was right about that.
Yeah, he is, he was, and it still rings true today. Because we are not at that level that we can unite, and I don't think it's going to happen. I want it to happen, but I don't think so. And so that's what I want to share with your guests, that don't waste your breath on these people. They you cannot reach them. They are so far behind.
All right. What do you think of that, Stephen? She says you can't reach these people.
Well, I believe that that we are all ultimately souls who have incarnated here to grow and learn, and I think that sometimes we can language things in a way that don't reach across divides. And so I'm always interested in speaking in a way that people can hear. I don't like to write off people. I don't believe that that's ultimately fruitful. So, you know, when I'm listening to a response, I'm thinking, how could I have framed that differently in a way that somebody could have actually received and had a meeting point? I think there's some validity in what you're sharing, that sometimes it's gonna be something that's off the radar for somebody, and there's just not enough of a receptivity. But I think it's worth trying and worth speaking into people's hearts and into a deeper knowing and into their real aspirations for a better world, and to try to build that bridge, even if it doesn't always work out.
You know, talking about ISIS, don't you think we should use every effort to go after them financially, to shut down their arms dealers, and to choke them that way, instead of just trying to, you know, bomb them here and there?
I think that we have to use the sort of the strong interventions, whether that's military or financial or other things, as a way to contain them. And also at this other hand, the other side I was talking about is to also extend more generosity to Islam in general, build more bridges. You know, even though I was not a George Bush, W. Bush supporter, I think when he, after 9/11, he made a real distinction between going after the terrorists who were behind things and really embracing Islam and making sure that there was a deeper sense of appreciation and connection. And that actually minimized some of the polarization. There was already some of it there. But I think that we have to kind of do both things simultaneously, or else it tends to create problems.
Jesse is in Danville, Virginia. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jess. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, George?
Good to have you.
Listen to your show every night.
Thank you, sir.
I apologize. I hate to continue in on the negative party.
That's all right.
But I listen to the show, like I said, every night, and I can honestly say that your guest is one of the most delusional individuals I think you've ever
right.
heard on the show.
Be nice now. Be nice, Jesse. Be nice.
Well, I would say I didn't call her no names, nothing like it, but I just, the thing is he keeps dancing around that, you know, he believes in not giving the, you know, giving people too much power. But from what I'm hearing a guy who believes in a utopian society. And to me, I'm hearing a guy that also seems to kind of fit right in with the New World Order agenda. And so, you know, to be honest, you know, in listening to everything, I hear him talking about all sides need to come together. But what I'm hearing him speak subconsciously through that is we need to figure out how we can get the right to see things the way we do. That's what I hear. Because even though he's speaking that all sides come together, he needs to realize that not everybody thinks the same way. And I personally, you know, like he said, that, you know, the marriage situation, I personally don't agree with that. And in the reason why I believe, you know, he made a comment earlier about 50% is saying they wouldn't want their family or their son or daughter to marry into a different political party. A lot of that is because they don't represent the values that we represent on that side. And, you know, and it's not all about just the politics, it's the values. And so, you know, I think sometimes we have a different understanding of what the values are, but the reason why you're having so much bitterness and clashing is because the government is trying to tell us how to think now. And I just see that the guest has an attitude that Big Brother government knows what's best. And the idea of a global police force to contain ISIS, we're dealing with killers. We're dealing with murderers. Islam, I'm not here to sit here and critique Islam, even though I know the Hadith is very clear about what peace is. I agree with Saba, or I think that was his name,
yep,
a little while ago. He's completely right. The true tenet of Islam is not a peaceful tenet. And I'm not saying that all westernized Islam sees that, but the eastern side knows the real tenets of Islam. So the fact is, this attitude of we need to contain them and deal with Islam better, I mean, you act like we can pat them on the back and maybe ISIS will back off. That is not the real world. I don't know what world that is, but it is not the world we live in. And I believe it is will cause the destruction of our country, as if it's not already heading that direction now.
All right, Stephen, you've got the floor. And by the way, I want to thank you for your composure, too, because you've taken some pretty rough calls here.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting for me. I mean, I think that ultimately it's forcing me to walk my talk. You know, I think there's clearly some people who don't agree with me on a lot of different points. And part of the point of a democracy is to have the ability to speak freely and to air differences that can be quite dramatic.
Sure.
So I do fully believe that the deepest solutions are ones that bridge left and right. And I have made deep commitment to understanding that. I read articles from conservative sites every day. When I've had real challenges with conservative political leaders, I've sometimes read their full books, like Sarah Palin. I had a very big issue with her in the past, and I took the time to read her books and really try to understand her worldview. So there are places where we're going to disagree on things, but I fundamentally believe in everybody's right to their opinion, and I do believe that the greatest solutions for us is when we can find that higher common ground and let down our guard and not necessarily be attacking each other, but to really see where are the points of synergy, where are the points of overlap, and how do we actually come together in a new way as the United States of America rather than the polarized political parties that are here right now.
Let's go to Mayat in New York City now. Hey, Mayat, go for it.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great show. I agree with you, and although I could retire, I'm doing a new column called Bureaucracy Beat. It's Mayat, M-A-A-T, and the last part is, a last second name is O-Y-A. So in many ways, you're on the right track, but what I think you're missing, well, first of all, Anna had a nugget, and the Illuminati is so covert in the sense of those who listen to Guns and Butter with Bonnie Faulkner, who has Michelle Sosudowski, who understands that ISIS is created by the intelligence command. It's people like Dr. Kevin Barrett, renowned Muslim scholar, and Dr. Jim Fetzer, we look at the false flag of 9/11 and the other false flags that follow. We understand that the bankers finance both sides, all sides of the wars, and so we do have a big dilemma. even, but you know, you're at least trying to seat yourself in some sanity. But as Anna said, they're not going to hear you. Look at what Trump is doing. And let me lastly say that Michael Younger did a book called Tribe. Trump is going for the tribe. In other words, the tribe of the invention of whiteness. And there's some people that are saying they want to push for a civil war. So we're in very serious times. We have to stay positive, and we have to get out of being the tribe. So let me know if you're familiar with his book, Tribe, which I haven't read, but I heard him on Book TV in another interview, and I think he has a key, and I'll listen over the air. Thank you.
All right. Only have about a minute left, Stephen. Let you react to that.
Thank you for the reflections. I do think that in times of a lot of change, when we are in the midst of shifting to a new way of being, that there's a tendency to go back to the old, and tribes are the tried and true way of humans organizing ourselves. So there's definitely a tendency to go back to tribal thinking, and you're just going to protect my tribe and defend against other tribes. And that actually doesn't get us to the next level. So I think you're right on in pointing to that element. And you know, I appreciate your wisdom on a lot of different areas there.
Stephen, where do you take this program next in terms of what you're doing?
What I'm really focused on now is seeding this idea of an American evolution. You know, we had a revolution that was the founding of this country, and now it's time to really go to the next level with an American evolution, one where we are welcoming the full range of political parties, as long as there's a sort of a foundation of mutual respect and a desire to collaborate in moving forward. And that really creates a different kind of ground. And so you can have evolutionary Republicans, evolutionary Democrats, evolutionary Greens or Libertarians, that it's really about all of us finding a role in helping to evolve our country to the next level and to put our focus on that shared mission of evolving a better America and a better democracy rather than on our differences.
Stephen Dynan, the book, Sacred America, Sacred World. Up next, remote viewing on Coast to Coast AM.